Welcome to the Agency of the Month, Department of Energy, sponsored by Leidos. Now, here's your host, Tom Temin.
For innovators working in energy technologies, it can sometimes be hard to gain traction for your ideas. The time and equipment can be costly, and corporations tend to play it safe with R&D funds. At the Energy Department, they've got a program working to eliminate common barriers that prevent market exploration of new energy technologies. Dr. Joanna Wolfson is director of the Technology to Market Program at Energy. She tells Federal News Radio's Lauren Larson how it all works.
The Department of Energy has as part of its mission to do R&D funding, and we want to make sure that the research that we fund actually has a route toward making an impact in the energy sector and in economic terms. And so to the extent that U.S. growth and competitiveness really can be driven by energy technology innovation, we want to make sure that energy technology that is being developed in the national labs and universities through DOE support has a route to market impact. What we find is that there are often these barriers that crop up that prevent technologies from getting to market, and we focus on reducing those barriers so that the market can identify technologies that make the most sense to develop and actually bring them forward. And I want to point out that one really typical tech-to-market approach is to look at individual technology projects and actually shepherd them through the commercialization process and make sure that they're a commercial success. But we're not doing that. We're taking a pretty different approach by looking at the innovation system very holistically and looking for ways to make that system work better so that the market can determine which technologies to advance. So the way that we often think about it is instead of funding individual technologies along the pathway to market, we actually focus on improving that pathway itself so that any projects that do get funded have a more efficient route on their way to having an impact.
And what are the biggest challenges to that holistic approach you're talking about?
Sure. So the challenges tend to be pretty specific to the energy sector or to the development of hardware technologies. If you think about innovation as a process, most of us think about someone has a great idea and then some funding could come in and that idea gets developed until it's ready for a customer. But what we find in the energy sector is that there are all these breakdowns. So the incumbents, the energy the large energy companies necessarily are pretty risk averse, and so there's an aversion to bringing on disruptive technologies. So there tend to not be these strong market signals or these great landing pads for new technologies. That's one breakdown. Another breakdown is that it's just very expensive to develop hardware technologies, and one needs to use pretty expensive equipment, and there are very long development times associated with developing these hardware manufacturing-based technologies. We always have to remember that energy is essentially an infrastructure business. So you're talking about building physical things, and it's very expensive when you compare that to developing a software platform or, I know, an iPhone app. And because of that, there hasn't been a lot of capital moving into the space from venture capitalists and other types of typical investors that support innovation. And so that access to capital on top of the nature of this being an established industry and on top of the facilities that are required to develop technologies makes things even less likely to make an impact. So that's the kind of thing we address.
How are you addressing those challenges? I know public-private partnerships are big right now. What are some other ways you're addressing those challenges?
So we think about these challenges at a high level in two groups. One, we think about market readiness and what's kind of keeping technologies from getting out of the labs and also what's preventing the private sector from being able to reach in. And then secondly, we think about resource access. So I'll probably use the national lab the national lab setting to give some examples of how we address these challenges. On the side of market readiness and getting technologies ready for an industry that has some risk aversion, We have a program called Energy I-Corps, which is adapted from the National Science Foundation's very successful I-Corps program, which is all about customer discovery. So through this program, we facilitate national lab researchers to reach out to the market and to learn about the end use of their technology. Now, this is a pretty straightforward idea, but the infrastructure did not exist for the lab researchers to do that. And so we built that infrastructure. We encourage the labs to do that. We provide a facilitated way for national lab researchers to experience that. And so that's an example of how, you know, we're trying to provide the environment that encourages these kinds of connections. And then, taking the other side on resource access, again, taking national labs as an example, the national labs are these terrific resources, but U.S. businesses often don't have access to them. And so we work really hard to change that. And this gets at developing technologies with better capital efficiency. We talked about how it's very expensive to develop these technologies. If we can get innovators in using the national labs, they can actually develop a technology with much less money than they could otherwise. So some of our programs have been about just lowering the barriers to getting outside partners to be able to get in and use the lab facilities. We have a program that we support called Cyclotron Road, which actually brings outside innovators and puts them in the lab for 2 years. We don't fund much of their research. They have to go get outside funding for that, but are facilitating their access to the lab is actually tremendously impactful, because then any funding that they do get goes a lot further, since they're able to leverage all of these resources that we have as part of the DOE National Labs.
Do you have any success stories you could share about I-Corps or any of these partnerships?
Sure. A couple favorites from Energy I-Corps. We have a team that has gone through recently, and I'm not able to give the details on it yet, but they actually have just received a private investment from a group that they worked with during their customer discovery process. That's a great outcome from our perspective. And they're actually spinning out a company. However, one of the best things about Energy I-Corps is that we don't just define success as a startup being spun out of the lab. It's also a success if the researcher goes back to their lab bench and thinks differently about their work moving forwards. And we've seen a lot of examples of that, where a researcher will go back, having gone through the program, really with their eyes open about what the market wants and what research might be most impactful. They go back to the lab, and we've had several examples where researchers ask us to, they mention that they want to rescope their work and say, you know, I have this project that's being funded by the Department of Energy. I now realize that I need to spend those R&D funds differently in a way that's going to be more relevant to the market. And we really love that outcome, because it means that we're not going down some paths that would otherwise have been, traversed, that would be the wrong direction.
Let's talk a little bit about Innovative Pathways. Tell me about that program.
Sure. Innovative Pathways is our most recent effort, and it really exemplifies this technology-agnostic approach that we take to improving how technologies can get to market. We recognized that we wanted better solutions to two of the challenges that I mentioned. So I mentioned incorporating disruptive technologies into the energy sector, and I mentioned the lack of capital. And in particular, that lack of capital stems from the misalignment of the traditional venture capital structure for supporting energy innovation. And our team put out a request for proposals a few months back that outlined these challenges and threw it wide open to the innovation community and asked for, what are some better ways to be doing this? What are better ways to incentivize large companies to integrate disruptive technologies? And what are some better ways to fill out the landscape of early stage capital for these innovative companies? And we were really overwhelmed, really blown away by the responses. We got, you know, over 80 proposals, really really innovative ideas for how you could reimagine the way that this innovation process works in the energy sector. And we've just recently announced the selected projects, and it's a set of 11 very diverse projects that are integrating, going to be integrating emerging technologies into the energy sector and testing out new investment structures for how to better support energy innovation. You know, some examples are an organization that's going to be working to tap into the potential of mid-sized corporations to be commercialization partners for technology developers. That's exciting to us because we normally think about big Fortune 500 companies as the go-to-market partners for disruptive technologies. But what if it's actually mid-cap companies that can be the more nimble and they're more hungry and they can be the vehicles by which disruptive technologies can get to market? And then on the investment side, we're funding a few proposals to develop the vehicles that would allow philanthropic and charitable and other types of new capital to support the earliest stages of technology commercialization. I think one of the things that I like best about this program is that it leverages relatively small amounts of government funding, and I'm talking about, you know, relative to other things that DOE tends to fund, we're talking about funding amounts less than $1 million to potentially catalyze really meaningful long-term change. If any of these projects can unlock a different way of doing things, a way of bringing new private sector partners to the table, that's something that can be sustained long-term by private sector funding and doesn't require long-term government funding, which we would count as a win.
Is there anything else that you need that you'd like to add that we didn't get to?
The one thing that I would add is, you know, we think we're tapping into a different approach here. There's an ongoing dialogue about how far along the technology, we call them technology readiness levels, the spectrum of a development of a technology, how far along there is it appropriate for government to fund? And there's obviously an ongoing conversation about that in different schools of thought. And what we think is exciting about the type of work that we're doing is that we're not talking about funding any individual technologies all the way through. We're talking about supporting the underlying infrastructure that lets you have a good handoff from the public sector to the private sector wherever it occurs. And what we like about this approach is that it doesn't pick winners and losers. It actually benefits technologies across the board, which is a more appropriate role for government in the first place. So we're really happy that we've been able to partner with, you know, private sector partners to bring these new mechanisms to bear and test them out.
Dr. Joanna Wolfson is director of the Technology to Market Program at the Department of Energy, speaking with Federal News Radio's Lauren Larson. We'll post this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Tom Temin.
For 40 years, Leidos has seen firsthand the Department of Energy's men and women solve our country's toughest energy, environmental, and nuclear challenges. In support of DOE's mission, our technical experts and scientists have delivered trusted solutions in infrastructure management, nuclear security, and IT modernization. Leidos has the experience DOE can count on, and we're ready for your next 40 years. Learn more at Leidos.com/DOE.
In February, the White House instructed federal agencies to root out all unnecessary, outdated, or ineffective regulations. At the Energy Department, a special task force is starting with the National Labs and the Appliance Standards Program. Daniel Simmons is the Acting Assistant Secretary in the Office of Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy at the Energy Department. He's the Regulatory Reform Officer, and he tells Federal News Radio's Lauren Larson what they're up to.
A few months ago, President Trump signed Executive Order 13777, and what that did is it established regulatory reform task forces at all of the federal agencies. The point of that executive order was to really focus on regulatory reform. Regulatory reform is a high priority for the president and for the administration. So they signed this executive order to make sure that we focused on creating a regulatory reform agenda, and that is how we got started. At the Department of Energy, I am what is designated as the Regulatory Reform Officer, so it's my job to run this task force inside the agency. And so what we did is we put together a number of people, a number of people throughout DOE with you know, years of responsibility or years of experience in the department to make sure that when we look at regulations, both internal DOE regulations as well as outward facing regulations, that we have years of experience at to be able to make informed choices to reduce regulatory burdens both inside DOE and as well as our outward facing regulations.
And who makes up the task force? How many people do you have? I know you said they've been working there a while and they have a lot of experience. Just how many and who are they?
There's about seven people that form the core task force. There are people from the office of a few people from the Office of Management, from the as well as from the NNSA, the National Nuclear Safety Security Administration, that does nuclear safety. That's a large part of DOE's responsibilities, as well as from environmental management, which is the cleanup of nuclear facilities that were unable to in making nuclear weapons over the year. There was a lot of contamination that was caused, and so it's the Department of Energy's responsibility to clean that up. So there's a representative from there as well. But not only do we have this core group, which is about seven or eight people, we also have a number of different task forces to look at a number of, about five different issue areas inside DOE. And while there is maybe like seven people that are kind of like the core team that meet together, there is a larger number, so it's looking at like 30 people if you look at all the task forces, all the subcommittees are looking at specific issue areas such as emergency operations, compliance with the National Environmental Policy Act, DOE's technical standards, as well as acquisition. So it is the core team is not that big, but the larger team working on it is quite substantial.
You're listening to our interview with Daniel Simmons, Acting Assistant Secretary in the Office of Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy at the Department of Energy. More after this quick break.
At Leidos, we know your call to take on the world's biggest challenges. You're a scientist doing groundbreaking medical research. You're an engineer building a sustainable future, or you're serving your country, sacrificing time with loved ones to make the world a safer place. Your work matters. We make sure you have the tools you need to get the job done. Leidos works for you, so you can continue working for the world. Visit us at Leidos.com.
We continue with our interview with Daniel Simmons, Acting Assistant Secretary in the Office of Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy at the Department of Energy, speaking with Federal News Radio's Lauren Larson.
Now, understand one of your first tasks is to simplify and streamline the procedures at the national labs. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure thing. So, the Department of Energy is rather unique. People think, people don't necessarily know what the Department of Energy does. A large part is taking care of the nuclear stockpile. That's what we do, as well as cleaning up for the Cold War. Those are two huge parts of our mission that people don't necessarily know about. And then it is really research and development. And so those missions, the nuclear security missions, as well as this research and development mission, those are largely focused at our national labs. We have 17 national labs. Secretary Perry likes to talk about them as crown jewels of research and development. They get billions of dollars of federal funding every year, and so it is critical as we work with the national labs. They're not there's one that is federal; the rest are run by contractors. That as we work with the national labs, as they are receiving billions of dollars of taxpayer money, that they are able to accomplish their research and development or their cleanup missions as effectively as possible without without a lot of overhead. And as happens anywhere, that there is, you know, things can get bureaucratic, and we're looking at ways to reduce that bureaucracy. And, you know, we think that we can save, you know, over $100 million a year in savings by taking a number of actions to streamline that process. So we're focused on research and development and not on, you know, essentially regulatory overhead.
So what have you uncovered so far? Anything?
You know, it's nothing that is earth shaking, nothing that is super exciting. But what it is that, you know, that when it comes down to looking at the you know, making decisions, making sure that that, for example, it's things like how buildings are designated, whether they're designated in terms of nuclear security and Category 2 or Category 3, which, you know, it sounds very boring, but actually could have a, you know, depending on how that designation happens, could save, you know, taxpayers $50 million a year is what we hope. So it is, you know, it really gets down into some mundane stuff. However, the reality is because we're talking about so much money that the dollar figures get are high, and really what we're focused on is just trying to make sure that we streamline as we work with those national labs as much as possible.
I understand you're also looking at the appliance standards program.
Yeah, that's so. The Department of Energy is not like an agency like the Environmental Protection Agency. That's really a regulatory agency, other than one program that we have, which is the Appliance Standards Program, and that is that the Department of Energy regulates. We create both test procedures as well as standards, efficiency standards for all appliances, and appliances are defined rather broadly. I mean, it's things like light bulbs, test procedures for televisions, dryers, clothes washers, and that program has an impact in the lives of Americans every single day, all throughout the day. And so it is critical as we look at that program that we are making sure that the program is as efficient as possible, because what matters at the end of the day is that Americans have information about the energy consumption of these products, as well as a regulatory program that makes sure that maximizes benefits for them and without, you know, massive burdens on, you know, the regulated parties, the people that make these products. And to that end, what we did is we had a request for information that went out to gather information from regular everyday Americans to the regulated community, the people that put these things together. And that request for information closed. We received over 150 substantive comments just a couple weeks ago. And what we're doing now is looking through those comments to find commonalities, as well as working with the program, working with DOE staff to make sure that we come up with ways to streamline and improve that program so that we are achieving the benefits that we want to achieve, which is, you know, appliances that save people money and that really help out Americans, since how we use energy is reflected through these products.
That's Daniel Simmons, the Acting Assistant Secretary in the Office of Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy at the Energy Department, speaking with Federal News Radio's Lauren Larson. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Agency of the Month, Department of Energy, sponsored by Leidos on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency of the Month.